A red letter N unfolds into a spectrum of colors.
Students.
I'm about to check my USC decision. I know it'll be okay if I don't, and I just saw a lot of people got rejected, so...
All right, I'm already on the page. It's this status update.
New update.
What's it?
Hey, status update. Sorry.
This is my ultimate dream school.
I'm getting rejected. I already know.
Family and friends watch them check.
I just clicked it. Oh, my God.
Students jump for joy, alone or in groups. A girl cries happily. A boy's whole class cheers. Students' vlogs and news reports.
This is some crazy stuff. Let's talk about this.
There's been a firestorm of news coverage on a sort of college admissions scandal.
Explosive new details about the largest college admissions scam prosecuted by the Department of Justice ever.
All of our friends are only talking about one thing, and it's this story. It's hit like a real nerve.
Real estate executives, a lawyer, doctor, and a litany of CEOs, all facing criminal charges.
An FBI investigation called Operation Varsity Blues.
Operation Varsity Blues.
Operation Varsity Blues.
How are you after the college scandal?
I'm sorry.
Rick Singer designed this scam and collected tens of millions of dollars from it.
Parents paid him top dollar to pass their kids off as star athletes.
Rick Singer.
Rick Singer.
Rick Singer.
Rick Singer.
Rick Singer.
The mastermind behind the entire operation.
It is sending shockwaves across the country.
Hounded by reporters, Rick Singer enters a courthouse. Words Appear, a Netflix original documentary. A reenactment. Before dawn in a Californian city, a silver-haired man wakes in bed. Sitting up, Rick Singer shuts off an alarm clock, reading 4 a.m. Tying on running shoes, he leaves the front door of a large house wearing jogging shorts and a t-shirt. Wiretapped phone calls.
Money goes into my foundation as a donation.
Oh, to your foundation, not to the schools.
Yeah, that way the kids don't know what happens, right?
He jogs through dark streets.
You make a financial commitment. What school you want may determine how much that actually is.
And so, in terms of things that are more than $500,000 or $300,000, what's that set of schools?
So that's Georgetown, Boston College, Georgia Tech, USC, UCLA, Berkeley, you know.
Okay, that's not bad.
But she's not a terrific student. She's been testing very badly.
She's smart. She's gonna figure this out. I'm sure he thinks I'm up to, like, no good.
Is Harvard easier because of legacy?
No, it's not.
That doesn't mean shit.
Your legacy means zero because...
Unless we're donating to a building, huh?
I went to Cornell. I've already given around $750,000 there.
Let's be frank, Ray. Your $750 is diddly dink in the world. Like, I know people who've given $50 million to Cornell.
Will you tell me where and how I should send the check?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we'll send it so that you get your IRS tax write-off.
Yeah, better.
What if they don't actually get it?
No, you don't have to worry about it. It's a done deal.
Is there a two-for-one special for twins?
Kids' athletic photos are altered with Photoshop. Words Appear. Title, Operation Varsity Blues. Newport Beach, California, October 15, 2018. In his large white Spanish Revival house, Rick answers his phone.
John, how are you?
Hey, Rick. You're pretty busy these days, huh?
Yeah, we got early decision coming up.
Words Appear. The conversations in this film are real.
So, hey, I do want to talk a bit about your pricing strategy and economic model. I don't want to force it on you, but I just think it could be helpful.
No, yeah.
There are recreations of wiretap transcripts released by the U.S. government. Some conversations have been combined or modified for time and clarity.
I have a bunch of schools that we work with directly, and, you know, it's kind of a first come, first served, right? So pick a place you want to go.
So if you said Harvard or Princeton or Georgetown, you know, what are those things?
Well, if you want to use my side door at Harvard, it's about $1.2 million.
Jesus.
But if you want to go through the back door, Harvard's asking for $45
million. God.
Stanford's asking for $50
million. Wow.
And they're getting it. That's the crazy thing. They're getting it from the Bay Area and from New York. John, this is how crazy it's gotten.
I'm going to do over 730 of these side doors this year.
Wow.
An agent listens on headphones typing notes. Former federal prosecutor Robert Fisher.
I've done a lot of wiretaps over the years. It truly is amazing sometimes what people will say on the phone when they don't know that the feds are listening.
Words Appear, Los Angeles, California.
then I need you to get him into USC, and then I need you to cure cancer, and oh, make peace in the Middle East.
I could do that. I could do that if you could figure out a way to boot your husband up so that he treats you better.
That's impossible.
The agent types Jane Buckingham.
So the government did a wiretap on Rick's phone, and he did not know. He was intercepted talking to many different people.
Jane,
every working mom comes to me and says, how do I do it all? Well, guess what? You can't.
There aren't many federal cases where you have 50 people indicted for a crime.
Rick.
So we're trying to get ourselves like a 34 on the ACT.
Yeah.
So Mark will do that. It really could be a 33, it could be a 34, it could be a 35.
Right.
Can you give me a handwriting sample?
Yep.
And a signature sample, so we can get kind of close.
Yeah.
Author Daniel Golden.
Rick Singer was the independent counselor who orchestrated the wrongdoing in Operation Varsity Blues, and the court documents indicate that it started in 2011. My own research into Singer's life and career indicates that on a smaller scale, he was deceptive for decades before that.
Words appear. Sacramento, California, 1998. Educational consultant Margie Amott.
I'd like to think that Rick started out trying to be professional and trying to be legitimate. For a number of years, Rick was the go-to person. He was the only one in town who did this sort of thing. And so if you wanted information about college admissions, you went to Rick. I think people were eager to use him. They were excited.
College
they
counselor Patricia Fells.
Thought that, wow, he knows the formula. He knows the rules. He has the key to the game.
Test prep expert Akil
if
Bello.
If you're a well-to-do parent in a school with 500 seniors, your child is getting a fraction of the attention you want your child to get. So you do what you do. You apply money to the problem, and you find somebody who will independently help just your child and help your child through this process. And that's sort of the genesis of an independent college counselor.
Rick's former client, Alexandra Beering.
My parents had said, we are hiring an independent college counselor who can help give you a little guidance on SAT prep and help narrow your focus for the colleges that you're interested in. And he'll be a presence in your life for the foreseeable future until college applications are in.
Dan Golden.
I believe that there were many students he worked with who had very good credentials, and he performed the normal services of a counselor and facilitated their admission to college by advising them on their essays or their recommendations and so on.
Lenora Lee.
He was the go-to college counselor at that time. You know, back then there weren't many resources. He had this company called Future Stars, and I had many friends that used him.
Heather Valeria.
It was one of those things where you kind of had to do it. If you didn't do it, you would regret it and worry about, like, oh, did I get into where I wanted to go? Like, could I have gotten in if I would have used him?
He always dressed like he had just come from the basketball court.
His idea was that what he was doing was coaching kids for getting into college, so therefore he dressed like a coach.
Margie.
He used to walk around in his athletic clothes and his little monk hairdo. He wasn't necessarily charismatic.
Didn't crack a lot of smiles, was pretty serious.
Very shrewd, businesslike.
He didn't chat much. He wasn't very personable.
There are people you meet who feel like they have this vibrating tension right under the surface all the time, and he was like that.
Rick at a podium. Margie Amott.
Rick was always drumming up business. He was always giving presentations at Borders, at the country clubs, and I also knew what his presentations entailed, and they were promises that he couldn't keep and lies.
Patricia Fells.
I would hear some stories from kids that made me think that he was a little bit fishy, a little bit slimy.
Lenora Lee.
I have one acquaintance who said that Rick started offering him, you know, hey, I could potentially get you into this school for a certain amount of money.
Author Daniel Golden.
Almost from the very beginning, Rick Singer was cutting corners, at least in a small way. The word I got from people who knew him in Sacramento was he was exaggerating and fabricating there on kids' applications, you know, changing their race from white to Latino or African-American so that they could qualify for affirmative action. I mean, he was quite brazen.
Margie.
Because I was always suspicious of Rick Singer, I started to keep a file. I started copying things off his website.
She reads.
The Singer Group has developed into one of the U.S.'s most successful life coaching and consulting businesses. Within a year, operations were launched in Singapore, Bangkok, Philippines, China, Japan, and Korea.
Rick Singer was frequently telling lies about his resume. Somebody told me that he pretended he'd been a board member of Starbucks. The more he got away with it, the more he did it.
At home, Rick uses a rowing machine. Words appear. Greenwich, Connecticut, June 15, 2018. In the evening in his home office, a man watches news as his phone rings.
Yeah.
Is this Gordon Gekko of Wall Street?
No, it's Gordon Kaplan. How are you?
I'm just
kidding with you, Gordon. How are you doing?
Yeah, good.
TV interview.
Corporate deal lawyer Gordon Kaplan. He is a partner at the law firm of Wilkie Farr and Gallagher. The U.S. tax system has two fundamental components, which makes this somewhat alluring.
My wife has told me a little bit about what you guys do. Could you just give me a little bit of background?
Okay, so who we are?
We are a $290 million company that I own, with 1,000 employees across the U.S., 280 internationally. We help the wealthiest families in the U.S. get their kids into school. We have every NBA owner, every NFL owner. We've got everybody. Now,
these families, they want guarantees. They don't want to be messing around with this thing. They want this thing done. And so they want in at certain schools.
So I've done 761 what I would call side doors. The front door means getting in on your own. The back door is making a donation, which is 10 times as much money. I've created this kind of side door in because with the back door, there's no guarantee. They're just going to give you a second look. My families want a guarantee.
Words appear. FBI affidavit, March 11, 2019. The wiretap agent types.
I'm a special agent with the FBI. I'm currently part of a squad that investigates economic crimes, including various forms of corporate fraud, securities fraud, and bribery. The facts in this affidavit come from my personal involvement with this investigation.
A website video.
Hi, my name is Rick Singer, and I'm the founder of The Key.
Rick Singer founded and operated The Key, a for-profit college counseling and preparation business. He also founded The Key Worldwide Foundation, a nonprofit corporation that is exempt from paying federal income tax. Rick Singer told parents that he could facilitate their children's admission via what he termed the side door, a special arrangement in which the parents would make a donation to his foundation to conceal the fact that they were bribe payments.
Rick gets into his black Tesla.
Between approximately 2011 and 2018, parents paid Singer approximately $25 million to bribe coaches and university administrators.
A girl's vlog.
This is America, like, you got money?
She rubs her fingers.
Best believe you have access to certain spaces that other kids don't have, so I'm really not...
John Ryder.
Over the last 3 or 4 decades, higher education has become increasingly a commodity. Something that you purchase, a product, it's a goal in and of itself, rather than the goal being to get an education.
Education it's consultant Barbara Colmes.
Your status has now increased because your child is at what's called an elite institution. It's all about bragging rights.
Perry Colmes.
The running sort of line in our industry is like the parents are applying to college and the kid is the vehicle through which they apply to college.
If you're a freshman, I'm really sorry. Because
a girl's vlog.
Are going to be thrown into a world where they're going to be like, college, 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 college. Go to college. You have to get the best grades. If you're not, you're going to feel like a failure. You're a failure. You're the worst.
If you're a parent and you didn't go to Harvard, this is your chance to now go to Harvard, right? In your sort of like warped mind.
Harvard from the air. Akhil Billow.
It's typically accepted that Ivy League institutions are the quote unquote best in the country. But all of those differences have almost nothing to do with the academics of the institution. U.S. News started ranking colleges in the 80s based on one criteria, prestige. That's it. That's it.
Prestige is actually a French word.
John Ryder.
And in the original French, it means something people don't realize. It means deceit. That's what prestige is in the college. It's imaginary. It's an illusion. Yet people believe in it.
Daniel Golden.
It's not just population growth that makes it harder to get into colleges today. The colleges themselves have brought it about because the more selective they look on paper, the higher ranked they're going to be.
Everything these schools are doing is massaging to try and up the rankings, and it's a really dangerous game.
Daniel Golden.
Most people see college admissions, it's based on merit, except for affirmative action for minorities. My view of the admissions process is all sorts of different preferences with, yes, some students getting in on pure merit, but many others getting in due to preferences that skew rich and white. One is by preferences for students who play niche sports like sailing or fencing or horseback riding, which most kids never get a chance to try. Then there's making a huge donation to a university. That gets them noticed by the fundraising office, which will recommend the candidate to admissions. Jared Kushner was the son of a very wealthy real estate developer in New Jersey. At the time Jared was applying to college, his father pledged $2.5 million to Harvard, and Jared was admitted to Harvard, even though by all accounts was a kind of average student who wasn't necessarily taking the toughest courses in his high school.
Perry Colmus.
A lot of the colleges won't actually guarantee the admission, which is interesting. So you might write a check for $3 million and the kid could end up being rejected. I think if you're not writing a $10 to $20 million check, I'm not sure it moves the needle enough for them.
Daniel Golden.
Singer didn't demand the kind of money that is required today if you want to absolutely guarantee your kid's going to get in. You know, these parents paid Singer $300,000, $400,000, $500,000. What he sold and what they bought was essentially a certainty of admission at a bargain basement price.
Rick calls a parent.
So I'm going to make him a kicker.
He does have really strong legs. Maybe he'll become a kicker. You never know.
Yeah, absolutely.
You could inspire him, Rick. You may actually turn him into something. I love it.
Yeah.
A Davos interview.
Bill McGlashan, good to see you here.
Thank you, Eric. It's nice to be here.
TPG Growth is a firm that people don't know that much about.
TPG Growth is the $4 billion growth arm of the private equity giant TPG Capital.
The more successful the business is, the more impact you're creating, and you get the virtuous benefits of a sustainable, scalable capitalism at work.
Rick to Bill.
Last year I had a boy. I made him a long snapper.
You love it.
He was 145 pounds. Long snapper. So what I'll probably need, if you guys have any pictures of him playing multiple sports, that will be helpful because I will Photoshop his face onto a kicker.
Okay, let me look through what I have. Pretty funny, the way the world works these days is unbelievable.
In an upscale living room, a black-haired man opens an Amazon package and pulls out a deflated water polo ball. A TV news report.
Devin Sloan, he's a California businessman, an executive.
Had the good fortune of getting to know many of you and sharing smiles and joy and laughter together.
Setting aside the ball, Devin Sloan takes out a water polo cap.
Last year, I had a boy who did the water polo. And when the dad sent me the picture, he was way too high out of the water. Nobody would believe that anybody could get that high.
They staged photos in a pool.
So I told the dad, I said, "What happened?" He said, "He was standing on the bottom." I said, No.
Bill McGlashan.
Yeah, exactly. You gotta be swimming, exactly.
That's right.
Now, here's the only question. Does he know, is there a way to do it in a way where he doesn't know what happened?
Well, what I would say to him, if you want to have that discussion now with your son there, say that we have friends in athletics who are going to help him. Because he is an athlete.
But I can't say that in front of my son because he knows he's not.
What he would know is that... I'm going to take his stuff and I'm going to get him some help, okay?
That he would have no issue with, you lobbying for him, you helping use your network.
Bill nods.
No issue.
You don't have to tell him a thing.
A businessman.
Is Bill McGlashan doing any of this shit?
Is he just talking a clean game with me and helping his kid or not? Because he makes me feel guilty. Or are you taking care of him in a way that he doesn't know because you have other interests with him?
No, not at all. It has nothing to do with his... But he didn't know. His kid had no idea. And he didn't have any idea that you helped him on the ACT. Because that's what he asked for. Bill McGlashan. Asked for his son not knowing.
Okay.
All right. So he's not been as forthcoming.
With me.
With you and with his own kid. He wants it that way.
Rick calls Bill.
Your guy, Augustin?
Augustin Hanias, yeah.
He's pushing hard, trying to find out your guy's approach with your son. He came to me and I said
I was not willing to talk to him about it.
He's been pushing me too. He obviously wants to get your help, you know, with his daughter. And I just said, you need to make your own call what you want to do, and you just need to talk to Rick and work with Rick.
No.
That's good. He's pushing hard, like, you got to tell me what they're doing. I said, listen, this is their situation, and Bill is very connected. You need to discuss this with Bill, not discuss it with me.
Well, he tried that. And just so you know, he sort of had a conversation with another family about the side door approach you have and was sort of suggesting, you know, do you think this is right, and da-da-da, and I just said, Augustin, you shouldn't be talking about this. You know, what Rick does is very specific to circumstances, and it just bothered me. He's out there talking about it.
Agreed, yeah. And And that's what worries me too. I said, listen, you are in a very competitive environment. You have to keep what you do to yourself. It will blow up on you. No matter who you think you know, it doesn't matter.
That's right, and he is not discreet at all. And that's why I was not comfortable talking to him about it.
Good.
Right? The New Yorker's Naomi Fry.
Rick Singer provided reassurance. The reassurance that other people just like you are going through this thing. I've dealt with this a million times. Rick was like a therapist or a life coach. Only he was also a criminal.
Justin Paperny.
My profile of Rick Singer is he's a born salesman. He was smooth and subtle, not overbearing, and knew that he had time. It's not like someone has to get into school today. It's not like the test is tomorrow. They have some time, so he nurtured the process well, like a good salesman does.
A father.
So what sport would be the best for them? Is crew the best? Is that even going to really matter?
Well, for me, it doesn't matter. I'll make him a sailor or something because of where you live.
A TV news report.
Massachusetts businessman John Wilson. He runs a private equity firm. He's accused of paying more than $1 million to try to get his kids into elite universities.
John.
And same kind of deal, any sport. You don't have to play the sport.
That's correct.
Now,
John sits by a pool.
What if they don't actually get in?
No, you don't have to worry about it. It's a done deal.
Okay, that's great.
Okay, I'll send you the information about the bank and the wiring stuff probably in the next day or so.
All right. Oh, by the way, you should mark your calendar for next July if you want in on Paris. Got a big birthday, July 19.
Okay.
I rented out Versailles.
Oh, my God.
You're crazy.
I know. A black tie party there, so you'll have to come.
Daniel Golden.
One of the amazing things about Rick Singer is that this guy from a kind of obscure background and without a lot to show on paper, you know, insinuated himself into quite a high social circle and made an awful lot of money doing it.
Lincolnwood, Illinois, 1976.
My sense was that Rick Singer had a somewhat unhappy childhood. His parents divorced when he was young. He was bright. He had the gift of the gab, unquestionably. After childhood, he went to several colleges, and then after that, he went into coaching. But his problem was he was too volatile, particularly as a high school coach. He tended to scream at the players if something went wrong. He was kind of like the Bobby Knight of high school coaching. When Sacramento State had a bad year, they went 4-24 one year. The whole coaching staff was fired, and that included Singer. And so that's when he looked around and he said, maybe basketball coaching isn't for me after all. I've got to switch careers. And he noticed this new industry of independent college advisors, and he became the first one in Sacramento.
Rick arrives at a house.
It's interesting how his background, in a way, prepared him for this scandal. I mean, if you think about it, as a basketball coach in college, he had firsthand exposure to how athletic admissions worked. And that was knowledge that undoubtedly he put to use years later in his efforts to bribe coaches to portray kids falsely as recruited athletes. He knew athletic admissions from the inside.
October 27, 2018.
Hey, Rick. I'm okay. I'm hearing a big rainstorm in Saudi Arabia.
Saudi Arabia?
Yeah, I'm in Dubai. I didn't know they had storms like that out there. Yeah,
the wiretapper listens.
Unusual. What's happening?
So I just gave the Stanford sailing coach $160,000 for his program. And while we were having that conversation, I said, hey, I'm hoping that this $160,000 that I'm helping you with helps secure a spot for next year.
Can I be guaranteed a spot for next year? And he said yes.
All it takes?
No,
that's not all it takes.
Yeah, okay.
This is not TJ Maxx or Marshall's or something like that.
Right.
So I want you to have first dibs. If you want, I can provide John Vandermore with a check.
I can send him your $500,000 to secure a spot for one of your girls.
Journalist Billy Witz.
John Vandermore, he was kind of lured out to Stanford. He was a successful sailing coach on the East Coast.
My name is John Vandermore. I am the head coach of the Stanford University sailing team. I'm also...
By all accounts, he seemed like a good, upstanding guy. There were a lot of people that were surprised who knew him that he got caught up in this.
SF1, take 8, soft sticks.
A clapper slates an anxious, broad-shouldered man. Words appear. John Vandermore, former Stanford sailing coach, an off-camera interviewer.
Did you ever imagine yourself in this situation before any of this happened?
Never. It's a lot. It's something that I don't think I've fully comprehended yet.
but it's something that'll impact the rest of my life.
Words appear. Stanford University, Stanford, California. John Vandemore.
I first got connected with Rick Singer through a phone call. He called me after practice one day. He introduced himself, said that he was a college recruiter, and was really interested in doing more with smaller sports. So I thought it was intriguing, and I agreed to meet with him the next morning. What I thought was really interesting is that I was expecting him to text me or call me when he got to Stanford, because Stanford has, it's very secure. You have to have a key card to kind of swipe in and out of every door, and somehow he just showed up at my door. So I was a little shocked by that, but it definitely told me that he had connections with Stanford that were far deeper than myself.
Rick sits in his office.
Rick Singer is kind of your California beach bum in a way. Flip-flops, t-shirt, shorts. He was actually really easy to talk to, and I had really good conversations with him. He was really engaging and drawing me in. Our interaction was solely about recruiting. Now, the way recruiting works at Stanford is that each sport is given a certain amount of spots that you can support. It kind of ended with him talking about this young woman named Molly Zhao.
Hello, everyone. I am 17 now. I've just graduated from high school.
Rick said that she really wanted to go to Stanford. My recruiting was pretty much done at that point, so I wasn't really considering her for a spot that I could support, and I had told Rick that. He contacted me almost right away and was like, is there any other way you could support? Her family is pretty wealthy, and they would be interested in donating about $1 million. My athletic director had said that it is something that Stanford could do, but that $1 million wasn't enough. To really have an impact with admissions. So that was it, and I, you know, didn't hear anything from Rick for a while. And in August of that next year, Rick called me up out of the blue and said, hey, you know, this is fantastic, Molly got in, and the family's so excited, and thanks for all you did. And I said, well, that's great, I'm excited for her. It's, you know, it's a big deal to get into Stanford, but I didn't really do anything. And I said, well, they're really excited, and they want to donate $500,000 to your program. I said, I mean, if they want to donate $500,000 to the Stanley program for me doing nothing, that sounds great to me.
Lawyer Robert Fisher.
I've seen no evidence that John did do anything to get Molly Zhao into Stanford. Why did Rick Singer donate $500,000 in the name of Molly Zhao? Only Rick knows the answer to that. That may have been a huge down payment for access to the Stanford sailing program.
So he sent the check. I got it in the mail at my campus mailbox, and I went into development and told my athletic director I'd gotten this $500,000 donation. She was excited for me. We talked about how I really hadn't done anything for it. No, it was kind of out of the blue, but, you know, I guess that's kind of the best kind of donation. At the same time, the head athletic director for Stanford was there as well and said congratulations, was excited about it. And I started to explain that, hey, it's through this guy, Rick Singer. And he turned to me and said, I know Rick.
Journalist Billy Witz.
I think what we see here is school administration officials, they just want to keep the money coming in, and they don't want to ask questions of how it got there. And I think we definitely saw this in the case of Stanford, when you'd have $100,000, $200,000, $500,000 donations that would come in for something like sailing, that wouldn't raise any red flags or wouldn't be scrutinized. It seems as if Singer targeted sports that were under the radar because the margins are tighter. He knew the right places to look.
A nighttime city skyline with a river. A word appears. London. Rick drives through dark streets.
So I've got two kids at Stanford and two kids at Yale. I'm trying to find out who's stepping up first.
Okay, all right.
Don't matter, because I might have a spot for both of them.
Really?
Maybe.
Newscast.
Yale soccer coach Rudy Meredith pocketing more than $860,000 in bribes.
You can come in an Ivy League environment and develop as a player and still have your Yale degree.
Give me the names. I'm working on it.
I got a new athletic director, is what I'm trying to tell you. I'm trying to work it.
Hold on one sec. Let me just...
Rick peers at street signs.
You know, I have no idea where the hell I am here in London.
No problem.
Freaking hate these one-way street bullshit things.
I know, and you're on the left side of the road, so you gotta be careful.
Yeah, tell me about it. Now I'm, 2, 3, where's 4, 5? Where the fuck is it? Now I'm on the main street again. I tell you what, I'm glad I live in the U.S.
The wiretapper types.
It wouldn't be so bad if you were in Sweden.
Yeah, well, then I gotta find myself a good Swedish girl then.
All right, well, next time I'm in Sweden, I'll take a look.
You tell me what you're looking for, and I'll see what I can do.
Well, I'll tell you this much. At my age, it's hard to find the right people. That's the hardest thing.
A blonde woman sits on a white couch with her laptop. Patricia Logan.
I met Rick through my very first time on a dating site. I'd never been on a dating site before in my life. And at 53 years old at the time, I figured, all right, let me give it a try. There he was, and there I was, and he messaged me, and it went from there. When I met him, did I look him up online? Of course, right away. And I thought, wow, this guy is, other than the poor video quality on his website, I thought, this is very interesting what he does.
My key method unlocks the full potential of your son or daughter and sets them on a course to excel in life.
I thought, he's really a go-getter. He's really out there doing something good.
Patricia puts on makeup.
Met him out for dinner, and it was interesting when we first started comparing notes about our past, and we both started working the very same time. He was 12, and I was 12. I had a paper route, and he was the kid that got the older kids to buy alcohol, sell to him. He'd sell it then for a profit to kids. So I said, okay, so I had a paper route, and you're a minor selling booze to minors. Great. He goes, yeah, you know, I was very industrious. So we laughed about that, and he was charismatic. He was interesting. He was smart. He was quick. It was like, nice to meet you. Great. Good night. I really like you. When I find time, let's go out again.
Was he pretty serious, or was he?
Oh, super serious. One time I sent him an emoji that's the Bitmojis, and I said, hi. And he came back with, you're crazy. Stay cool in school, little goofy. His own family said, you know, I made him laugh. He needed to laugh more. He was not a...
Patricia's smile fades.
Wanting to stick around long. He was just so very busy with college coaching, house to house.
Daniel Golden.
Another characteristic of Singer's was that, you know, he worked nonstop. From what his former assistants told me, he wouldn't spend the night at a hotel. He'd spend it on an airplane. And he would be, you know, texting his assistants at all hours of the day, giving them various tasks. He was an extremely driven guy.
Patricia.
I got the sense he had clients all over the place. You know, I just look back on text messages, and every time we connected, he says, I'm in Dallas, I'm in Fort Lauderdale, I'm in New York, back to California. He even lived out of a van at times when he was coaching. He had this big Mercedes-type van thing. He'd sleep in it because it was just easier.
Rick's alarm wakes him at 4 a.m.
Rick had a passion for just getting up every morning, 4 a.m., working out, swimming, cycling, running. That man was like the Energizer Bunny. I've never seen anybody that would just have so much energy and go, go, go. And I think he lived on about 3 hours of sleep a night, from my understanding. And that was fine with him.
He sits after his run.
I looked at a lot of his behaviors and realized, you know, he was hiding a lot. He had been leading and living this secret life. No wonder why he couldn't get close to people.
A stone hilltop mansion overlooking vineyards.
Hey, Rick.
Hey there.
Is this a good time?
Yeah, it's good for me.
Okay, great.
A TV broadcast.
My name is Augustin Hunez. We're sitting up here in one of the pavilions enjoying a beautiful afternoon at Quintessa in Napa. And so, let's go and taste.
Yeah, I just wanted you to walk me through the whole kind of water polo thing again and how it works. I mean, you and I talked about the economics, timing, and how all that works. You and I had a brief conversation about it, but I just kind of wanted to get it straight, if you don't mind.
Okay. I'm putting together your daughter's sports profile now. It'll be a water polo profile now. I take her transcript, test scores, and profile to the liaison for all sports at USC. Football, everybody has to go through her.
A Google search and a TV panel interview.
My name's Donna Heinel. I am a senior associate athletic director.
Billy Witts.
By all accounts, Donna Heinel was a very diligent supervisor who was really a stickler for details. She was also getting $20,000 a month from Singer.
And then she...
On the phone.
They have meetings every other Thursday, which are called subcommittee meetings, where the dean of admissions and two admission staff are there, and they go through the athletes.
It could be water polo this week. It could be football next week. It could be basketball. Just depends on where they are in the seasons and what's going on.
Billy Witz.
Heinl became the gatekeeper between the admissions department and the athletic department.
Daniel Golden.
Because the idea was for the students to be treated as recruited athletes, that's virtually a guarantee of admission.
Some of the fake athletes at USC, it seems like it would be hard to miss. I mean, there was a 5'5" men's basketball player. Another example is a high school cheerleader who was made to look like a lacrosse player. There was a water polo player who didn't play water polo in high school. It's pretty remarkable that none of these things raised a red flag. And on the rare occasion when they did, Heinl was there to smooth them over with the admissions department.
Your daughter will get presented, and if the committee says, okay, good, she's in, then what happens is Donna tells me she's in, we're good.
Essentially, she's been admitted before she even applied.
At that point, you will send your $200,000 check to our foundation, and then Hovan will call me and say, okay, this
the
is
agent
how I
types,
want the money
who is Hovan?
You understand
that my daughter's not worthy to be on that team.
No, no, he's my guy, and he knows she's not coming to play. He knows all that.
Billy Witz.
There were four USC employees that were involved with Rick Singer. One of them was Jovan Vavik, the water polo coach. Vavik is by far the most successful coach in college water polo. So Vavik has been charged by authorities of accepting more than $250,000 in exchange for helping two students get into USC as water polo players.
Hovan types. He would be the fastest swimmer on our team. He swims 50 yards in 20 seconds. My fastest players are 22 seconds. This kid can fly.
Donna Heinl essentially puts them on the recruited walk-on list, which happens all the time. And they just don't show up for practice. And that's fine.
Daniel Golden.
One of the things that Singer took advantage of was the fact that athletic departments and admissions offices both take a coach's word for the athletic caliber of the person they're recruiting.
Junius.
Is there any risk that this thing blows up in my face?
It hasn't in 24 years.
Do I know all that? But the environment, like some article comes out that the polo team is selling seats into the school for $250,000.
Well, no, because she's a water polo player.
But she's not.
A girl checks admissions online.
I'm so scared. You just check it. No matter what happens, you're gonna be fine.
You have to face it.
And you have to face it, yeah. You're gonna be fine. I promise.
I got deferred.
You got deferred?
A bespectacled student.
There's an update in your application portal, and then you click on it, and then there's that letter that pops up. We appreciate your passion for our school. We are sorry to inform you.
We are unable to offer you admission to Stanford.
Reading online, a girl covers her tearful face. Other students react to bad news.
I'm not getting into San Diego or UCLA. Just makes me feel like shit.
I literally started bawling. Like, it just angered me.
There were a lot of tears. There were a lot of punching the wall. There were a lot of cursing.
And I, like, did not leave my room. I was, like, crying the entire weekend.
I got rejected.
Words appear. March 27, 2020. Marlboro school head Priscilla Sands.
I have seen a change, and I have seen a progression. And I do think that students are more obsessed with college.
Perry Kalmus.
I would say most kids are getting plagued by this anxiety, and you could feel it. They're freaking out when you meet with them, and they're like, what if this happens, and what about that? And, you know, do you think they're going to not like me because I wrote this one word? And it's like they're losing their minds because of it.
Girls.
Basically, I got rejected by almost all of the colleges I applied to. It's just awful because it's basically you think something's wrong with yourself.
In the future, when we have children and they're applying to colleges, where do you think they're going to be going? Like, no one's gonna be getting into colleges at that point. It's crazy. Like, USC's acceptance rate just went down like 3% more. It's like at 12% now, which is like
Akil Bello.
Most students who want to go to college could find a college to go to. The problem is far too many students want to go to the same colleges.
My goals were Ivy League. Like, I wanted to get in that. And when I didn't get in, I was just broken.
I took AP Bio. I'm taking AP Environmental Science this year. I'm not interested in it at all, just to have this extra leverage that doesn't even help.
Barbara Colmes.
This is what's going on in high schools across the country. How many advanced classes can you take? You drop orchestra because if you don't do orchestra, you could take another science class. there's so much pressure on these kids. Because if a school offers 15 APs and you've only taken one, you can cross off the top 50 schools in the country.
Girl,
you have people who just go home and all they do is homework. I hate seeing how it consumes people's lives.
Ms. Sands.
I think social media is a contributing factor because as soon as a student anywhere has an acceptance, it goes on to social media. So it's just another time to sort of feel a punch in the gut.
It's just really shitty to feel like this. And I know the people that got in are super deserving.
A girl films a makeup video.
I like to curl my fake lash with my real lashes.
Naomi Fry.
Olivia Jade is an extremely successful YouTube influencer, and she had millions of followers watch these videos where she would, you know, get up, brush her teeth, do her morning makeup routine, pick out outfits. So it's this very diary-like thing, but with the added benefit of branding opportunities.
I created my own collection with Princess Polly. I get to reveal and announce my highlight palette with Sephora collection.
She proudly holds the product box.
She's the child of the actress Lori Loughlin and the fashion designer Massimo Giannulli. They supposedly had both of their daughters, Olivia Jade and Bella, pose on a rowing machine and sent these pictures to Rick Singer and had them accepted into USC as coxswains.
Blonde girl.
I actually went to high school with Olivia Jade, and I know the school she was at. I saw a picture of Olivia Jade's sister on the wall with the seniors, and it was like, congratulations for getting into USC. And then I remember hearing later that Olivia had also gotten into USC. And I was like, whoa, because USC is extremely hard to get into. So not only one sister, but both of them.
Olivia vlogs.
Off to school.
Hi, Olivia. Have a lovely day.
I won't.
So excited.
I will not.
Don't put that out there for the little kids who love school.
Whatever.
Naomi Fry.
There's an Olivia Jade video where it's the first day of her senior year of high school, and she's pretty miserable.
I've gone to one class, and I already want to die.
It's so hot in every single room.
I just want to go home.
Then she returns home, and she says, I've never been so happy.
So happy to be anywhere in my whole entire life.
Then there's also a nod to a kind of like, hashtag bless.
We have to remember how lucky we are to have an education and how many people would kill to have a good education or an education at all. So as much as I hate it, I still hate it, but I'm grateful that I get to be educated, even though I hate it.
Olivia Jade had said that she wanted to drop out of high school, in fact, when she was a senior.
So I told my mom I wanted to quit school, and then she was like, that's not happening. And so she made me stick it out, and then my dad made me go to college.
Mostly my parents really wanted me to go because both of them didn't go to college, and then...
They did all right, though.
Yeah, I think they did fine.
They did just fine.
Yeah. Hypocrites.
Naomi Fry.
It never seemed like she was very interested in what college could give her. And why should she be? She was very successful in what she was doing. Things were going great for her.
Olivia poses at Sephora. Donna Heinel sits in a boardroom.
In November of 2017, Donna Heinel presented Olivia Jade's athletic profile to the USC subcommittee, and they approved her admission to the university conditionally. Less than 2 weeks later, Rick Singer wrote an email confirming to Olivia's parents that she was going to be accepted at USC and told them to keep it hush-hush until March.
Words appear. Marymount High School, Los Angeles, California.
The guidance counselor at Olivia Jade's high school became suspicious because he didn't believe either of the sisters participated in crew. According to the government, Olivia Jade and her parents discussed how to avoid the possibility of the high school counselor disrupting their admissions scheme. Olivia Jade asked whether she should list USC as her top choice school, and Lori replied, yes, but it might be a flag for the weasel to meddle, presumably referring to the counselor. And Massimo added to that, fuck him, and said that he was a nosy bastard.
The counselor's internal report.
Things began to unravel when Olivia Jade's counselor had a phone call with a USC admissions official.
Conducted routine counselor call with USC to check up on the dozens of applicants that year. When we got to Olivia, USC said she was flagged as a recruit for the crew team. I told them I had no knowledge of Olivia's involvement in crew, and based on what I knew of her video blogging schedule, highly doubted she was involved in the sport.
Somehow, Massimo found out what the counselor had said to USC and went to the school to confront him.
The counselor answers his phone.
I received a call from the front desk that Mr. Giannulli was downstairs and wanted to talk to me. When we sat down in my office, he aggressively asked what I was telling USC about his daughters and why I was trying to ruin or get in the way of their opportunities. His tone made me visibly nervous.
Naomi Fry.
Word of the confrontation got back to Donna Heinel at USC, and she left a voicemail for Rick Singer, cautioning about the situation.
Donna Heinel.
Yeah, hey, Rick. Look, I just want to make sure that, you know, I don't want the parents getting angry or creating any type of disturbance at the school. Okay? I just want to make sure that those students, if questioned at the school, that they respond appropriately, that they're
walk-on candidates for their respective sports. They're looking forward to trying out for the team and making the team when they get here, okay?
The wiretapper listens.
Want to make sure of. I don't want anybody walking into their high school and, you know, yelling at counselors. That'll shut everything down.
Author Daniel Golden.
The scandal did surprise me because it reflected a kind of blatant illegality, you know, bribing college coaches to pretend that their children were athletes when in fact they weren't. Why would a college coach jeopardize their job and their reputation to let somebody in for a bribe?
Yale's Rudy Meredith coaches girls soccer. John Vandemore.
Fundraising was certainly a big part of my job. The funding that's going to, like, the football and basketball programs are pretty extreme compared to what a smaller sport like sailing gets.
Robert Fisher.
The school isn't making money by having a sailing program. It's great they offer it for the students, but at the end of the day, that program is in the red, right? That money has to be either made up for in donations or the school is just writing a check for salaries, equipment, travel.
Vandemore.
My dream would be if my job was just a coach. And all told, I was horrible at fundraising. It's not something that I really like to do, but it was kind of done out of necessity. It was always a struggle to kind of survive.
He walks down a hallway.
In December 2018, all the head coaches are going to meet with the senior staff. It's a big deal to have that meeting. In 11 years, I had met with a senior athletic director maybe a handful of times. So I'm in the athletic director's office, and there's like six of them there. We had just won a national championship less than a month earlier, and the athletic director hadn't even recognized it. Didn't say congratulations, didn't reach out to the team, nothing. Still didn't even say congratulations during that meeting. The only thing that he was doing was watching TV. He's facing, you know, four or five screens on a wall and is watching basketball. And the only time he looks up at me and kind of really starts asking questions is when it comes to fundraising. It's like, oh, John, you're doing a great job of fundraising. You know, keep that up, that's really helpful. And then he goes back to the television and that's it for the whole meeting.
Interviewer.
And this is someone that knew Rick Singer?
Yes. Yeah, he told me he did.
At Stanford U, Rick Singer visits John Vandemore.
Rick really was pushing me hard to really take a look at this student. You know, he was really interested and knew that I really wanted a second assistant coach, and I was struggling to fundraise for that position. And he said, hey, I would like, through my foundation, I would like to donate $110,000 to the program to get you through, you know, a year or two of funding that position. It's like, you know, no strings attached. I just want to continue our relationship and keep, you know, bringing people to you and have you take a look at them. I said, great. That's fantastic.
Robert Fisher.
I think this was a slippery slope for John, and he didn't knowingly wake up and say, you know what, today I'm going to join this racketeering conspiracy. But all the government has to prove is, did you accept the money in exchange for something that the giver of the money wanted and didn't duly earn, didn't deserve?
Justin Paperny.
The biggest factor in the Stanford coach's case was he didn't personally enrich himself. The proceeds that he received furthered the sailing program at Stanford. Rick Singer was skilled at leveraging off people. He had a sixth sense to exploit and find the vulnerabilities of people with whom he was working.
At a courthouse.
From my understanding, the Felicity Huffman case, he told Felicity, well, your daughter's scores aren't good enough to get into this school. Turns out that was made up, that was false. I believe the daughter would have gotten in regardless of that. It's identifying those pain points. Felicity can begin to rationalize, am I a good enough mother? Have I spent too much time on my career? Don't you want your daughter to go to a good school? Leveraging off the weakness, the pain point.
Rick calls Bill.
Now, his grades are not good enough to get into SC.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's amazing. Wow. Okay.
Augustin Hanias.
What would her chances be without this process?
Zero.
She won't get in.
Zero. She has no chance.
Paperny.
What he did well, like what a good marketer does, he sold the benefits. It's very simple. Would you like your daughter to go to Harvard? Yes. Great. If you would like your daughter to go to Harvard, do this. Here's the reality. Your daughter's not scoring that well. Been mentoring her for like 2 years. The kid just doesn't get it. And if she's not Harvard material and you really want to go to Harvard, we got to find a different route. We got to take a different path here. Here's that path. We're going to have someone take the test for you. What do you mean take the test? This guy for $15,000 is going to take the test.
Rick.
This is absolutely unheard of. To make this happen, I can make scores happen, and nobody on the planet can make scores happen. Your kid won't even know it happened. It will happen as though she will think she's really super smart and she got lucky on a test, and you got a score now.
It's the home run of home runs.
And it works?
Every time.
Gordon Kaplan.
What is the number?
The number on the testing is 75,000, okay? It's 75,000 to get any scores you want to get on the ACT or SAT.
Calmus.
If you want to get into an elite university in America, on the ACT, which is scored out of 36, if you're not really in the 34, 35, 36 range, or on the SAT, if you're not sort of 1,500 and above, you're probably not in the conversation.
Former Stanford admissions officer John Ryder.
For many years, the SAT was explained and advertised as being an aptitude test, a very prominent predictive feature of getting a high test score is family income. The College Board has admitted, and the ACT have admitted this for years. This is not a secret that's being divulged. If I were appointed czar of American college admissions, I would abolish standardized testing. It would mean that all of these wealthy test prep companies would have to find something else to do.
Add.
Register your son or daughter for the Princeton Review's 1,500-plus course. It's a game changer.
Akil Bello.
There's a fair warning around test preparation. This is a business. Every claim they make is marketing driven.
Add.
We even offer a guaranteed score improvement of at least 150 points.
So you have people out there who are making claims like, we'll improve your score 500 points. Well, that's worth $1,000 investment. But it's only worth $1,000 investment if you have a disposable $1,000 to invest.
John Ryder.
All standardized testing automatically advantages the people who are already advantaged.
Calmus.
Most affluent people are accessing people like me, and 85% of America just can't access that level of expertise. A private college counselor is going to run you anywhere from, on the low, low, low end, I mean, you're probably not getting a quality college counselor, $200-$300 an hour. On the high end, you're talking about $500 to over $1,500 an hour to access these guys and gals, and it's a lot.
Gordon Kaplan arrives home. Akil Bello.
When you look at it in light of the scandal, when you have predominantly rich families who had every advantage that said they should be fine on the SAT, they're going to score in the highest demographic, they had all the prep in the world that they wanted, and yet they still cheated.
Rick on the phone.
Okay, the first thing we need to do, and I think I mentioned this to your wife, we need to get your daughter tested for a learning difference.
Let's say it's my person who does it, or whoever you want to do it. I need that person to get her 100% extended time over multiple days.
Akil Bello.
When you take the SAT or the ACT, it's a timed test, right? There are restrictions on how it's delivered. To account for learning disabilities, what often happens is accommodations are provided. You have to have certain medical documentation of the need for these accommodations. And that's one of the avenues that Rick Singer exploited.
I also need to tell your daughter that when she takes the test, to be stupid, to not be as smart as she is. The goal is to be slow.
To not be as bright as she is, all that, so that we show discrepancies.
To Kaplan.
At the Academy, kids are getting extra time all the time.
You mean the Greenwich Academy?
Yeah, everywhere in the country. What happened is, all the wealthy families have figured out, if I get my kid tested and they get extended time, they can do better on the test. Most of these kids don't even have issues. They're getting extra time.
The playing field's not fair.
No, it's not. I mean, this is, to be honest, it feels a little weird, but.
I know it does.
But when she gets a score and we have choices, you're gonna be saying, okay, I'll take all my kids. We're gonna do the same thing.
And a score of, you would think that would be.
The score will be whatever we want it to be.
So
again, and keep in mind, I am a lawyer, so I'm sort of rules-oriented. Doing this with you, no way. She's taking the test. It's
her taking the test, right? There's no way any trouble comes of this. Nothing like that.
So,
Rick grimaces.
I explained this to you before.
I know, and I apologize.
I get you.
Bear with me.
Okay.
I will explain to you the process. You're going to fly to LA and go on a fake recruiting visit. You'll visit some schools while you're out here. Then what'll happen is Mark, who is the proctor, will fly in and he'll show up on Friday night, just like you guys would. Then on Saturday morning at 8 o'clock, you guys will show up at the school. Your daughter will go in and take the test. Mark will be your proctor. She'll be the only one taking it in the room with Mark. What we do with kids who have learning differences is they write their answers on a separate sheet to the side of it so that we can rebubble. She'll think that when she's done with the test, she has taken the test, no doubt about it. She'll walk out the door at the end of it and she'll say to you, "Dad, it was so hard," or "I'm so tired," or whatever the typical reaction out of the kid. You guys will leave, and then Mark will look at all her answers. Mark will then take the exam and then ensure that whatever score we decide that we want to get, he has it down to a... It's unbelievable what he can do. She'll never know that this actually occurred. She'll look at her results and she'll say, "Oh my God, Dad, I got a 32.
Viewing her score online, Kaplan's daughter beams. News footage of Mark Riddell and a lawyer approaching a courthouse. A reporter.
He's the test-taking whiz who helped dozens of high school students cheat on their college entrance exam.
Andy Lockwood.
Mark Riddell was the one who was flying out to different testing locations and proctoring or correcting answers. I have a client whose daughter was a big tennis player and studied with him years ago.
He was a Harvard graduate who worked in college exam prep for IMG Academy, which is a school for athletes in Bradenton, Florida, where Serena and Venus Williams went.
Very unassuming guy, but the story was after he had his first child and needed more money, that's how he kind of got caught up in the pitch from Rick Singer to make a few extra $1,000, you know, here and there.
Legal experts.
He did not have inside information about the correct answers. He was just smart enough to get a near-perfect score on demand.
If Rick Singer is the linchpin of this college admissions scandal, then Mark Riddell is the brains.
Bello.
One of the things that amuses me and annoys me when I see most of the reports around him being a, you know, test-taking savant or whatever they choose to call him on the moment, he's an adult who's taking a test designed for 11th graders. Anyone worth their salt in the test preparation industry should be able to do what he did. The question is, would they be willing to do it?
Reporter.
Singer, the admitted mastermind behind the scheme, paid Riddell $10,000 per test to fly from his home in Florida to test centers in Texas and California.
Pretty much everything in the higher ed system is based on trust in other people. At what dollar value will you be willing to compromise your ethics, right? That's the ultimate question here. For me, it keeps coming back to, it's the wealthy who have the ability, and in this case, the means and the willingness to take advantage of these things.
Michelle Janavs.
Rick, I had a question for you. So I was able to get my younger daughter the multi-day ACT.
Okay, good. You got her extended time over multiple days. Got it.
Yes, so I got that. The only thing is, my younger daughter is not like my older daughter. She's not stupid. So if I said to her, "Oh, well, we're going to take it up at Rick's," she's going to wonder why.
A Google search and news report.
Michelle Janavs, whose family created the famous snack Hot Pockets, accused of paying $100,000 to boost her daughter's ACT score and get her into USC as a bogus volleyball recruit.
How do you do this without telling the kids what you're doing?
Well, in most cases, Michelle, none of the kids know.
Right, but how? No, I understand she won't even know, but how do you explain it to her?
Well, you don't really have to say anything. For the school, you could say you're going to be up in LA for the weekend.
That's what we did last time. I mean, my younger daughter is more the issue here because she's going to say, you know, like, why am I taking it up there?
And you're just going to say that you're going to do it up here because it's really easy. It's convenient.
Daniel Golden.
I thought the conversations that were recorded on tape were achingly poignant. You ache for the children who read these transcripts, and you may also ache for the parents who I'm sure bitterly regret being so candid.
Michelle.
She's smart. She's gonna figure this out. She's gonna say to me, she already thinks that I'm, like, up to no good, and I didn't want to have this conversation with her.
No.
Yeah, I got it. I totally get it.
She is totally different than my older daughter. Like, she really needs to think that she... My older daughter was like, I don't really care. This test is such bullshit. I don't ever want to take it. And my younger daughter is, like, actually studying to try to get a 34. So it would actually be a great boost to her. And my older daughter, she came to me and she was like, you're not going to tell my sister, are you? And I was like, no. It's weird. It's weird family dynamics, but every kid is different.
Cool.
Distracted, Rick nods and reads a file. Picking up a knapsack from a hall bench, Rick leaves his house. Golden.
Rick Singer's lifestyle did change and become more lavish. He moved from Sacramento area to Newport Beach and had a very nice house there.
He drives his Tesla.
Singer invested in a whole bunch of quixotic ventures, restaurants, soccer team, and many other things. So the money came in fast, and it seems to have gone out pretty fast to his lifestyle and to his investments.
At her upscale bungalow in the mountains, Patricia Logan answers her phone.
Rick called me up out of the blue and said, I haven't talked to you in about a year. I remember you being extremely sharp with marketing in the restaurant business, in real estate. I think you'd be perfect as opening up and running one of my offshoot companies of my coaching business. And I thought they sounded great.
A plane lands on a runway.
Rick had invited a group of us to a big conference up in LA with all these very high-powered individuals. From my understanding, there was an influx of many millions coming in to help him launch some of these businesses. We all were assigned our positions, and then we all took off to start up these brand new companies. It was really exciting. Rick offered to drive us back to the airport, so we get in his Tesla. And it's like rush hour traffic. Rick is zipping in and out of traffic, going 90 miles an hour. We were just on the edge of our seats, hanging on.
They arrive at LAX.
So we finally get to the airport in one piece. He said, bye, you know, good to see you again. I'll see you soon. Go to give him a hug, and he plants a big old kiss on me. And I said, what was that all about? And he says, well, I wanted to see, like, maybe there's something here. Maybe we could date. And I looked at him and I said, you know what? I knew you from back when. The amount of time that you spend with your career, with your businesses, the little bit amount of time you'd even have to return a phone call, let alone send a 2-line text, will never work.
Entering a room, Rick sits in a chair. Words appear. Rick Singer's reality show audition.
My name is Rick Singer. My job is to life coach kids and families through the whole process of getting into college. We have families in Champaign and Miami, and they send their plane to come pick me up, come to the meeting for a couple hours, 2-3 hours, put me right back on the plane, send me to the next place I need to go. It's amazing.
Patricia.
When I watched that video that he sent to do this reality show, it was a bit shocking to me.
We work in the home of all these families, so we know them intimately. I know what their bedrooms look like. I know what the laundry room looks like. I know how they get along. So I know where the right
thing is. I thought, really? You're going to put yourself out there like that for this? And it just didn't make sense. Everything was so private with him.
The whole time they're yelling and screaming at each other. It's my life. No, if you go to this school, it's the wrong school. I don't want to pay $50,000 to go to school. I mean, unbelievable.
It just didn't make sense, especially at the caliber of the coach that I, you know, believed that he was.
Rick walks through an airport.
He didn't have a lot of time for people in his life. He was married for years and has a son. When I met him, he was divorced probably 6-7 years. He would say, I'm only going to do this coaching for another 3-5 years, and then I'm done.
Rick arrives at a hilltop mansion.
I don't know. I really don't know what made him happy or what his desires even were. It's almost like on a rat wheel, you know, trying to get to a means to an end, and there was really no end in sight.
Rick sits alone on a plane. At Kaplan's house, his daughter plays tennis as he stands on a porch.
So it's just you and me. I mean, is that kosher? Can we?
Absolutely.
Part of the reason why I'm taking my wife off this, she's very nervous about all this, and I just, I want to have a, let me ask you straight up, you've never had an issue with this,
No one's ever gotten in trouble with this.
Never had an issue with anybody.
Could you ever see that happening?
I'm not...
Rick speaks over Bluetooth.
I've never seen it happen.
What I'm asking is, could this ever get back to my daughter
or to the family? I mean, this comes out... I don't even want to know what you guys do. I'm just...
Rick, so you understand...
No, I totally get it.
You're absolutely confident. There's no issue here.
Rick waters shrubs.
We've been doing this for a long time.
Let me put it differently. If
somebody were to catch this, what happens?
The only way someone can catch it is if you guys tell someone.
I'm not going to tell anyone.
Well?
It's just, to be honest,
I'm not worried about the moral issue here. I'm worried about the... She gets caught doing that. You know, she's finished. So I just...
It's never happened before in 20-some-odd years. The only thing that can happen is if she...
Someone talks.
Yeah, if she tells somebody.
Oh, yeah, she won't talk.
Picking a diseased leaf from the shrub, Rick examines it. Daniel Golden.
Singer didn't make a fateful mistake that led to his being exposed. What happened is that somebody was arrested on an unrelated securities charge, and that person traded information. That financial executive said, you may be interested to know that a coach at Yale asked me for a bribe.
For Pernie.
A gentleman by the name of Rudy Meredith, who had been working with parents to get their children into Yale under the guise that they were going to be soccer players. And, of course, the first question they asked Mr. Meredith after they investigated and indicted him was, Mr. Meredith, is there anything you'd like to tell me? Yes, there is. There's a gentleman named Rick Singer who I'd like to introduce you to, and I'm happy to cooperate against him because I don't want to go to prison. So just like that, Rudy Meredith is a cooperating informant. And then he cooperates against Singer.
A word appears. Boston. As Rick Singer descends an airport escalator, he takes out his phone and reads a text. Rudy Meredith, have you landed? Stepping from the escalator, Rick stands at the bottom reading, Rudy, I'm at the Long Wharf Hotel all day. Found someone at Harvard I can introduce you to. A woman pushes past Rick impatiently. He walks off. Rick arrives at the hotel.
Thank you.
Leaving a black Mercedes with a valet, Rick enters the sliding glass front doors. With his knapsack slung over one shoulder, Rick walks down a long, nondescript, dimly lit hallway, checking room numbers. Rick knocks on a white door, and it swings open. The FBI wiretap agent smiles.
Hi, Rick.
Another female agent stands behind her. As Rick stares, she flashes her badge.
Why don't you step inside?
Gazing in shock, Rick enters the room as though sleepwalking. Sitting on a couch, Rick is surrounded by four agents as he watches a laptop on a coffee table.
It will happen as though she will think she's really super smart and she got lucky on a test. And you got a score now. It's the home run of home runs. And it works every time.
An agent shuts off the audio file. Words appear. FBI agent declaration.
Singer agreed to cooperate with our investigation and to be interviewed. However, he was not fully forthcoming regarding parts of his scheme, and it was my impression that he was not taking full responsibility for his conduct. Singer told us that the payments he and his clients made to university athletics programs were donations. We informed him that a payment in exchange for recruiting a fake student athlete to an athletic team is illegal.
She types.
The next day, after consulting with his attorney, Singer agreed to consensually record phone calls with other individuals involved in his scheme. For those calls, we instructed Singer to engage in a ruse.
By a hotel pool, Rick stares into an outdoor fire pit.
So the reason I'm calling is,
Rick calls a brunette woman.
My foundation is getting audited now.
Oh. Well, that sucks.
Yeah, right? And they're going back like they always do.
Yeah.
Newscast.
Elizabeth and Manuel Enriquez of Atherton.
They're accused of paying $400,000 in bribes.
So they're taking a look at all my payments, and they asked about the large sums of money that came in from you guys.
Okay.
So essentially...
For all the good deeds that you do.
Absolutely. So, of course, I didn't say anything, you know. I
I'm not going to tell the IRS that, you know, that Mark took the test for Isabel and that Gordy...
Words appear. Gordy Ernst, yeah. Georgetown Gordy, you know, tennis coach.
We paid Gordy to help get into Georgetown, right?
Right.
So I just want to make sure that you and I are on the same page.
Okay.
In case they were to call.
So what's your story?
So my story is essentially that you gave your money to our foundation to help underserved kids.
The agents listen in.
Of course.
And,
those kids have to go to school.
Absolutely.
In the hotel bathroom, Rick lifts his golf shirt as an agent tapes on a body camera. Pulling his shirt into place, she adjusts the angle. Paperny.
I'm not surprised at Singer's level of involvement. Much like he seized an opportunity to enrich himself to help get their children into school, he equally seized another opportunity to earn cooperation credit. So he was just as zealous and cooperating as he was in getting these parents to pay him to get their kids into school.
Carrying his knapsack, Rick strides up the front walk of the Enriquez house, glancing about anxiously. In the elegant living room, he has coffee with Elizabeth and Manuel.
So there's no paper trail of money?
No, there's no paper trail of money.
Right. So why did Isabel do the test in Houston? We gotta get into that story.
Manuel crosses his arms.
So let me go into it.
Rick sets down his china cup.
Essentially, there's nowhere where anybody knows, because in my books, it doesn't show that there was any money paid to Mark for taking the test for Isabel, okay? So it doesn't show anything at all in our foundation or anything, just so you know.
They listen grimly.
Right. So, well, the question is, if anybody calls me, the response is that I'm not going to comment on my daughter's Houston issue.
Well, remember, she went there because she needed special...
I understand.
Accommodations.
She smiles.
Accommodations.
But I'm not going to comment. We got to be very careful just getting an inbound call from somebody. I have no idea who you are, so I'm not going to respond to an inbound call from anybody.
Rick's hidden camera records them. Leaving the house, Rick walks down the front walk to his parked Tesla. As he circles his car, the blonde agent watches from a Ford parked by the curb. Glancing up, Rick meets her eye and she nods. Gazing back solemnly, Rick gets into his car and shuts the door. Words appear. Stanford University, November 6, 2018. John Vandemore.
Rick Singer said that, hey, I really want to get to your relationship. I want to call you in about a week, and I want to talk about another donation like I did with the $110,000, and I would like to continue to do that. So I said, great. So he was true to his word. He called me like, I think it was a week to 2 weeks later. I was kind of rushing out the door, but he's talking to me the whole time on this phone call. Essentially, I'm just yanking him to death. He said, hey, he wants to donate $160,000 right now, and he'd give the rest later to kind of make continue a deposit in our relationship. That's kind of like the only word that I really picked up was deposit. And so I took it as his deposit on relationship was that he would bring me more recruits to consider, and we kind of see how it would go from there. And then I didn't hear anything from Rick again, and still haven't actually. That was the last conversation I ever had with Rick Singer. That phone call was set up by the FBI. It turns out that was the most tragic and most devastating phone call of my life.
Yeah, so I just want to make sure that we're confirmed that, you know, going forward, I'm going to at least potentially have a spot with you. It'll probably
be an athlete, like the other student who wasn't an actual sailor.
Okay.
And then I'll put together a profile for her and...
Agents, listen.
Put all the major regattas that I come up with from the internet and bring someone to you. And then we'll make a payment to you again.
Interviewer.
As someone who's defending somebody, how did you feel hearing that tape?
Lawyer Robert Fisher.
It wasn't good from my point of view. And it would have been tough at trial. Like, tapes are... When I was a prosecutor, I did a lot of wiretaps. And I played a lot of wiretap calls for tapes. And juries love hearing wiretap calls. It can be very good evidence. So I explained that to him. I heard the call. I thought this was a good one, and it could be tough to explain.
Rick makes calls.
So I wanted to let you know our foundation is being audited.
Yeah.
Which is very normal, right?
Yeah.
So they've been doing an audit on my foundation.
Okay.
Which, as you know, is pretty typical.
Uh-huh.
My foundation's being audited.
Uh-huh.
Like everybody on the planet, huh?
Agents, sure. Listen.
So they've been,
Fisher.
This wasn't a typical sting operation. If you look back at some of the larger white-collar cases, Enron, for example, the leadership is indicted. Maybe the CEO, the CFO, the COO, and then really the indictments end. Traditionally, a large RICO indictment like this is going to be organized crime. if you're going after a syndicate that deals drugs, right? You start with the local level dealers, you try to flip one of them, you get a wire, you work your way up to the middle level dealer, and then you finally end up with the kingpin. Well, here, Rick Singer was selling product, and yet you had him first. And then you worked your way down the chain to get the buyers of the product.
They just started an audit on my foundation.
Yeah.
Which is typical, right?
Okay.
Which is pretty natural.
Yeah.
So what I'm going to tell the IRS is that your donation to our foundation essentially went...
Wait, Rick. Let me ask you a question.
Devin Sloan.
Shouldn't we get together for a coffee over this as opposed to over the phone?
Whatever you want to do, I'm fine.
All I'm going to tell the IRS is that your donation to our foundation went to help underserved kids. That's it.
Yeah.
Justin Paperny.
In listening to some of the tapes of Singer, he's as skilled as I've ever heard of getting someone to acknowledge wrongdoing.
Fisher.
Yeah, he was pretty good on the phone, but that's only going to work with these white-collar professionals. Historically, white-collar defendants have almost no filter on the phone.
We know people at Goldman Sachs who, you know, recommended you highly. My husband and I laugh every day about how great your work was. We're like, it was worth every cent.
If he was talking to organized crime members, he would have been made as a cooperator within 30 seconds on the call.
So what I want is to make sure that you and I are both on the same page.
Because what I'm going to tell them is that you made a $50,000 donation to my foundation to help underserved kids. Not that Mark took the test for your daughter.
Augustin Junius.
Or that she took the test at the West Hollywood Test Center.
Dude, what do you think, I'm a moron?
No, I'm not
saying you're a moron. The point is that...
I got it, Rick. I got it. I'm just going to say that I've been inspired how you're helping underprivileged kids get into college. Totally got it.
A balding man.
Hey, Rick, whatever you do, you do, you know? I really don't feel comfortable talking to you about this stuff in terms of kind of, you know, your dealings.
Newscast.
Steven Sempervivo, a Los Angeles businessman, paying $400,000 to get his son into Georgetown as a fake tennis recruit.
You know, all I know is that we used you for the charity stuff and we used you for the counseling, and your dealings are your dealings. And so, you know...
No, I get that, and I understand that, but at the same time, we were all a part of...
No, I don't agree with that at all.
You don't agree that we got him in through tennis?
I don't. I don't. I, you know, you did what you did, Rick, and that was your stuff, okay?
Okay.
You know, you did what you did, and so I'm not going to take accountability for your actions. And I think that, you know, you need to be accountable for...
Absolutely. I'm absolutely accountable
that I got him in through tennis and that you guys were aware of it. And I'm totally aware of it, and I accept total responsibility that I used my relationship and made your son a tennis player. And we all agreed that that's what we were going to do.
You know, I don't have any details, but I think that you need to be accountable for what you did. So I don't want to talk about this anymore because, you know, I think there were two separate things, and we used you and we donated. We donated as a charity, and it was a good charity, and we were excited we could help you. And, you know, in terms of, you know, how you do favors for people separately, that's, you know, I...
The blonde agent listens.
We appreciate any help you gave us, but, you know... We used you in terms of in terms of your college stuff. We paid you well for the work you did there separately. So, and we appreciate it. So I think that, you know, if you're trying to turn something around in terms of, you know, what you did and how you did it, then I don't want to be a part of that.
Bruce Isaacson.
You know, I'm so paranoid about this fucking thing you were talking about. I don't like talking about it on the phone, you know?
Rick sits on Bruce's couch.
I'm thinking, you know... Are they, I mean, I can't imagine they go to the trouble of tapping my phone, but would they tap someone like your phones?
Newscast.
Real estate tycoon Bruce Isaacson and his wife Davina paying $600,000 to help their two daughters get into UCLA and USC through the test cheating scheme and the athletic recruitment scheme.
Bruce paces.
In worst case, we'd get a call from them and they would say to you, you know, I guess prove you gave this money. They'd ask for some.
But you did.
Yeah.
Leaning back, Bruce puts a hand to his head.
I'm just thinking that... Oh, my God, because you're thinking, does this roll into something where if they get into the meat and potatoes, is this going to be a front page story?
Well, the person who'd be on the front page.
Yeah, but well, I
Rick
but,
films
but
him
if,
on his body cam.
If they got to the meat and potatoes, which a guy would love to have, is it? Look how hard it is for these kids to get into college. And here, look what's going on behind the scenes. And then, you know, the embarrassment to everyone in the communities. My God.
Bruce sits.
It'd just be.
Rick listens, downcast.
Yeah, it was, Oh.
Bruce rubs his hand over his mouth anxiously. Rick stares into a glass of water. Words appear. February 2019. John Vandemore.
So, you know, I fast forward a couple months, we go through the Christmas season and everything else. We get a knock on the door at, you know, 7:30 in the morning. And it's two women. They kind of hold up badges and say, I'm, you know, from the IRS and I'm from the FBI. And I said, well, what's this about? What can I help you with? Oh, we just have a few questions in terms of college admissions and so on. I said, well, whatever I can do to help. So the FBI agent started asking questions about Rick Singer. And so I described our relationship, that he brought me recruits, you know, he was donating. And they said, no, that's not what it was. It was you taking bribes. And they kind of wrapped up with saying that, you know, Stanford knows all about this and they're really angry with you. And they both gave me their cards and they said goodbye.
They leave.
I promptly went upstairs, sat down on my bed and cried. I didn't know what happened.
Fisher.
John Vandemore reached out to me, and he was in need of an attorney. There was such a sense of urgency, like, well, no, you're going to have to meet him before next week. Like, we have to know if he's going to take a plea deal or not within, like, 48 hours. He flew in the red eye.
In Boston.
Right, and I had never met him before, but he just looked, he was tired and obviously extremely upset at what was about to happen.
And he says, so it's not good. You're being charged with mail fraud, tax fraud, and wire fraud. Each of those counts carry a 20-year sentence in prison.
The allegation is that he joined Rick Singer's conspiracy. The object of that conspiracy was to help these students who were not, in fact, failures get recruited for his team so that they would gain access or admission to Stanford. And in exchange for that, Rick would either wire him money or mail him a check or hand him a check. So that triggers the wire fraud and the mail fraud.
They already had Stanford willing to testify against me. They had Rick Singer, who was going to testify against me. And I didn't really have any evidence on my side. Between my wife and my dad and I kind of decided that it made sense for me to plead guilty, be a felon for the rest of my life.
He enters a courthouse with his father.
When you plead guilty in federal court, you have to get there early and meet with the Department of Probation. And he was being interviewed.
At the time when I was in that interview, that's when the story broke.
Broadcast.
We're here today to announce charges in the largest college admissions scam ever prosecuted by the Department of Justice. We've charged 50 people nationwide.
Billy Witts.
I was in Las Vegas covering some conference basketball tournaments when I got a phone call early in the morning from an editor saying, what are you doing? Whatever it is, drop it and get to Los Angeles.
News.
Breaking headline of that massive college cheating scandal late today.
Dozens of actors, coaches, and CEOs are among those charged.
Fisher.
And my phone started blowing up.
And my lawyer was looking at his phone the whole time and, you know, it was like, wow, you know, this is huge.
33 parents have been charged, including Hollywood stars Lori Loughlin.
Authorities arrest Felicity Huffman at her Hollywood Hills home.
They had guns drawn and everything.
Raids on the homes of the rich.
Every single one of these parents should be in jail.
How the schools fell for these photoshops, I don't know. I mean,
a comic photoshop of Olivia Rowing.
Olivia Giannulli was famous for her presence on social media. Well, now she's become target number one for public outrage.
Her famous parents are charged with spending $500,000 in bribes to get their daughters into USC.
Girl. I started watching Olivia 3 years ago, so I've been watching pretty much every single one of her videos since then. She goes and cheats to get into school and takes a spot from possibly one of her own fans.
Fry. She lost a lot of her sponsorships. They discontinued a makeup palette that she did with Sephora.
Backgrid follows her in a parking garage.
How are you after the college scandal?
She hides her face.
Have you been speaking to your mom?
In a weird way, she has almost become a bigger celebrity because of this.
A TMZ
Olivia,
man.
It's good to see you back out and about. Feeling confident?
Kelly McLaughlin.
People attacked her on Instagram and everything, and her comments were flooded with stuff.
Girl.
She can, like, look at people's comments on the internet and be like, oh, they're just trolls. Like, no. I'm not trolling you, dude. I'm pissed. I'm disappointed in you. And,
Olivia's YouTube page.
The only thing I have left to say about this.
She unsubscribes. News footage of Vandemore entering a courthouse. Reporter.
John Vandemore would agree to accept more than $600,000 from Rick Singer, the alleged mastermind of the college admissions scandal.
Margie Amott.
A neighbor texted me and said, are you reading those articles? Do you see who it is? And it was, oh my gosh, it's Rick Singer.
I started jumping up and down.
Patricia Fells.
I said, I can't believe it. I can't believe they caught the guy. I cannot believe
Robert
it.
Robert Fisher.
The amount of messages I was getting on my phone, the news alerts, it really was, I thought, an overwhelming reaction to a criminal case.
Walked outside, which wasn't a very good idea. There was cameras in my faces, questions being blurted out.
What made you want to plead guilty?
It was overwhelming.
It was a mob scene.
It was also the only time you're not allowed to have your cell phone in the courthouse. Checked my phone, and the first email I see is from Stanford telling me that I'm fired. I didn't have a paycheck anymore. Our health insurance, most importantly, my kids' daycare, the roof over our head. I was on the Stanford campus, you know, the same school that was my victim.
Coach Vandemore, any message to your former athletes? They looked up to you.
I also made the mistake leaving my social media on, and it's just hate. I got a couple death threats on the phone.
Anonymous folks, you know, sending messages that were upset at what they thought he did.
I was the worst fat fuck that they've ever seen in their life. How did I ever fit in a freaking sailboat? How could I do this to Stanford? I should just fucking die and go away.
Harry Kalmus.
The week that it broke, we got a call from a Chinese guy who wanted to pay $10 million to get into Harvard. And I was like, man, have you read the news? Like, this is the worst week to make this call.
Patricia.
When this story broke, I was getting ready to go into a meeting, and I got a call from a friend of mine, and he says, hey, who's the guy you worked for at the getting into college company? And I said, Rick Singer. Why? And he says, you gotta be kidding. I said, no way. He says, turn on the news. Go on, you know, go on Facebook, go on Instagram, whatever. Just open up your phone and look.
Her eyes widen.
And I couldn't believe it.
Footage of Rick leaving a courthouse with his lawyer, swarmed by press.
There's a videotape of Rick just walking solemnly with all these reporters and not looking at anyone, and my heart just sank. It just sank.
Vandemore.
Finally, it was time for me to go in. It's my time to be sentenced. Rick was still in there, and we literally have to cross each other right away. And Rick, of course, doesn't look me in the eye or anything else.
Rick ignores just, him in the hallway.
I'll never forget that moment when we walked by each other like that.
Rick walks away with a blank face.
My heart is pounding, sitting in between my two lawyers, and, you know, the judge comes up, and conspiracy racketeering is what I end up pleading guilty to.
Fisher.
Judge Vobel understood that this was a guy who really cared deeply about his students, and therefore there really was no need to send him to jail.
Judge Vobel.
Mr. Vandemore is probably the least culpable of all of the defendants in this group of cases. Certainly, the parents are in a different position. The other coaches benefited for themselves. He did not do that.
She gave me 6 months of home confinement, 2 years of probation, and I got a $10,000 fine.
Fisher.
I think for John, that was truly the right decision. And he didn't have to serve time. He's home with his kids. He's bettering himself. He's going back to school. He has a job. He seems, you know, when I talk to him, that he's in a much, much better place. I believe in Stanford's victim impact letter, they said they're still in possession of over $700,000 in donations. Neither me or any associates working for me at the firm could find any case where the victim of a racketeering conspiracy at the end of the conspiracy ended up $770,000 richer than they were at the beginning of the conspiracy.
Stanford University's campus, a Sacramento suburb. Margie Amott.
Rick Singer is back in Sacramento. He drives around town. Again, he's still in his athletic clothes. He doesn't look any flashier. He swims twice a day at a local tennis club, and he gets out of the pool in a Speedo and does yoga and push-ups, and he's on the phone. Sometimes he has multiple phones. My understanding, he's telling people that he's not going to go to jail because they know the judge, et cetera, et cetera. But again, knowing Rick Singer, you just don't know what to believe. You don't know if he believes it. You don't know if it's an outright lie. You know, he's pled guilty to 4 felonies. I just have to believe he's going to go to jail.
A man dogs Rick.
Is the system broken?
Rick ignores him.
Any comment on anything?
Naomi Fry.
There's a video in which you see a guy with a mic trying to get Rick Singer to answer questions, and he just stonewalls them.
Rick ignores him and unlocks his car.
Did any good come out of this, Rick?
He seems unperturbed by these people trying to interview him. It makes you wonder about the levels of his regret. He's a bit of a cipher in his attitude about this whole affair.
The man holds his mic.
You seem like you're comfortable. You're taking your time here.
Rick loads his gear into the back seat.
Did you really work with over 700 families?
Rick gets in the front.
Rick, is the system broken?
Shutting the door in his face, Rick drives away. TV news reporters.
Actress Lori Loughlin of Full House was sentenced to 2 months in prison.
Her husband, Massimo Giannulli, was sentenced to 5 months.
Actress Felicity Huffman received 14 days behind bars.
No good will have come out of these sentences or out of this scandal. The fines they've been given?
Barbara Comis.
Meaningless, in terms of hitting them in their pocketbook. What a difference it could have made if we hit them hard and put that money to work for underprivileged kids. That would have been amazing. Then you can say, at least some good came of it.
Golden.
I try not to blame the families or the parents. I tend to focus the criticism on the colleges and universities that created this system. If they didn't have these loopholes and these preferences for families of privilege, then I don't think there would be these kind of temptations. This scandal is not necessarily a reason for colleges to change their ways, because it makes the colleges seem more exclusive and desirable than ever. If all these rich people are willing to go to these incredible lengths and risk jail time just to get their kids into these colleges, then they must be extremely valuable.
Ms. Comis.
What are we doing to these kids by pounding them into the ground with top 25, top 10, top 5? Because ultimately, where you do go to school has little or no effect on what will happen to you in the future.
The United States has
Akil Bello.
Over 3,000 colleges. You have infinite choices.
Forget about USC.
John Ryder.
Go someplace else. You can get a great education almost any place if you want it. The parents in this case didn't believe that because the bigger school had the prestige, had the glitter, had the glamour, had the bragging rights.
Akil Bello.
Why did these parents choose to cheat this when their children had so much already? Part of it seems to be when you reach a certain level of wealth, there's a relentless pursuit of the trappings of power. You want to have the fancy car, you want to have the fancy house, whether you need it or not. And it just seems to me that the atmosphere created in high wealth societies is part of the problem.
Naomi Fry.
In America, we love the wealthy and we hate the wealthy. They disgust us and they fascinate us. This story was a perfect opportunity to see how rich people live and the realities of the system being exposed. And so there's something incredibly refreshing to have just a little bit of justice being served in, you know, a sea of injustice.
Led handcuffed from his house, Gordon Kaplan sits in the back of an FBI car. Leaving court, he is hounded by press cameras. Words appear. Gordon Kaplan pleaded guilty, sentenced 1 month in prison. Elizabeth and Manuel Enriquez pleaded guilty, sentenced 6 and 7 months in prison. Agustin Junias pleaded guilty, sentenced 5 months in prison. He leaves court with lawyers. Steven Sempervivo is arrested. Words appear. Steven Sempervivo pleaded guilty, sentenced 4 months in prison. Isaacson is arrested at home. Words appear. Bruce Isaacson pleaded guilty. Making tea in her kitchen, Michelle Janabs turns as an FBI officer knocks on the door. Words appear. Michelle Janabs pleaded guilty, sentenced 5 months in prison. John Wilson is arrested at home. Words appear. John B. Wilson pleaded not guilty. McGlashan is let off in handcuffs. Words appear. Bill McGlashan pleaded guilty to one charge. Outside a courthouse. Words appear. Devin Sloan pleaded guilty, sentenced 4 months in prison. Jane Buckingham pleaded guilty, sentenced 3 weeks in prison. Donna Heinel pleaded not guilty. Hovan Babic pleaded not guilty. Gordy Ernst pleaded not guilty. Mark Riddell pleaded guilty. Rudy Meredith pleaded guilty. Outside courthouses, press mob doorways. Accused parents and coaches leave as cameras and mics are shoved in their faces. At home, John Vandemore sits glumly. Words appear. John Vandemore's house arrest ended in December 2019. He continues to coach sailing independently. Stanford said that it has distributed all $770,000 it received from Singer following recommendations from an outside philanthropic group. The university denies that the athletic director knew of Rick Singer or any improper gifts made through his foundation. They also deny that any amount of money can have an influence on admissions. Fisher.
Rick will be living with this for quite a while. If he didn't cooperate, he would have been charged, maybe convicted already, and right now he's out a free man still. And his cooperation won't be complete until the very last person charged in this conspiracy is sentenced, and that is most likely going to be a while from now.
Before dawn, Rick jogs through empty streets. Words appear. Rick Singer pleaded guilty and awaits sentencing. Rick's side door into colleges is now closed. The back door remains open at many colleges for those willing to pay. Rick jogs on through the early dawn. Audio description by Descriptive Video Works. Credits transcribed from opening. A Library Films production, starring Matthew Modine, Josh Stamberg, Wallace Langham, David Starzik. Edited by John Carman. Producers Yuri Henley, John Carman, Chris Smith. Written by John Carman. Directed by Chris Smith. Cast in order of appearance. Rick Singer, Matthew Modine, John B. Wilson, Roger Rignac. Lead FBI agent, Jillian Peterson. Jane Buckingham, Courtney Rackley. Gordon Kaplan, Wallace Langham. Bill McGlashan, Josh Stamberg. Devin Sloan, Jeffrey Allen Rector. Augustin Junius, Randy Hernandez. Rudy Meredith, William Christopher Stevens. Bruce Isaacson, David Starzik. Michelle Janavs, Kristen O'Meara, Donna Heinel, Angela Nichols, Mark Riddell, Graham Outerbridge, Elizabeth Enriquez, Allison Allwine, Manuel Enriquez, George Tovar, Steven Sempervivo, Ken Wheeler, Judge Zobel, Susan Harmon. Consultants, Margaret Amott, Akil Bello, Robert Fisher, Art Director, Kristen Gibler, Costume Supervisor, Andrea Monroe. Post-Production Supervisor, Christopher Noviello. Consultant, David M. Shenkula. Researchers, Jacob Andrews, Alexander Shaheen. Archival Producer, Cassie Sagnus. Fact-Checker, Edith Honan. Original Score by Leopold Ross, Nick Chuba, Atticus Ross. Score orchestrated, conducted, performed, recorded, and mixed by Leopold Ross, Nick Chuba. Producer, Kevin Daly. Executive Producer, Luke Coulson. Head of Production, Kate Berry. Managing Director, Jennifer Sophia Hall. Archival footage and photos courtesy of AP Archive, Axiom Images, Film Supply, Getty Images, iStock, Pons, Shutterstock. Production logos. Quebec Production Services Tax Credit. SAG-AFTRA, IATSE, International Brotherhood of Teamsters, Panavision, Alexa, edited with Adobe Premiere Pro, Endcrawl, MPA number 52962. Title, Operation Varsity Blues. Copyright 2021, Netflix Worldwide Entertainment, LLC. All rights reserved. This motion picture is protected under the laws of the United States and other countries. Unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition may result in civil liability and criminal prosecution.
A red letter N unfolds into a spectrum of colors.